You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're going to be talking about something that I think we've all, and you probably as well, have been thinking about over the last number of years. We have, let me just go right to some headlines, and maybe that will start us off with what the show is going to be about. Why don't your psychiatric drugs work better? Gen Zers, this is from New York Post, Gen Zers say antidepressants have ruined their sex lives. I'm dead inside. And then TheGuardian.com, a pill for every ill. Doctors say Australia overprescribing antidepressants to mask toxic social conditions. Drugs, prescriptions, overprescribing, creating unknown results, consequences.
Yeah.
And yet we think we know some things that we may not know. But we've learned a lot. And then over the last week, Lisette's been listening to some stuff and sharing it with me. This book is called Sedated, How Modern Capitalism Created Our Mental Health Crisis. He writes it from a UK perspective. A lot of his stories come from the United Kingdom. The UK was trying to help workers either get back to work or handle situations where they were under stress and feeling depressed. Mm-hmm. The things that worked, the things that didn't work, the things they tried.
So he mentioned different countries. So United States, Denmark. And
we've got some interesting statistics, interesting information. Let me see if we can start off the show with the limited effectiveness. So one of the things that he mentions is the limited effectiveness of psychiatric medications. He refers to, and I'm not sure it was in this book or it was something you're listening to, studies done by Bob Whitaker. And actually, I believe Bob Whitaker did a study of studies. He looked at various studies in psychology of the efficacy, the effectiveness of drug therapy, especially for psychiatric patients. Mm-hmm. And he had some interesting things that he came up with. Number one, let's start with that there's a limited effectiveness of psychiatric medications. Despite their widespread use, that many of these psychiatric drugs show limited long-term effectiveness in treating mental health disorders. Increased antidepressant prescriptions without a significant decline in depression rates and suicide incidences. Suicide, and especially suicide with antidepressants, as prescriptions go up and up and up, the corresponding amounts of suicide a year with antidepressants, do you know what it is right now, approximately, per year in the United States?
No, what is the number?
Somewhere in the area of about 5,000, 5,200 people who have killed themselves with antidepressants.
Wow.
And that has steadily climbed every year. So more people are getting diagnosed, more people are getting prescriptions, and more people are killing themselves with their antidepressants.
Amazing.
It's amazing. It's a big number.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we look at that and go, so if the antidepressant is not helping and they're still depressed, we're going to look at that. We're going to look at what Bob Whitaker and James Davies says about that. It's a really difficult thing because when you know somebody who is depressed and clinically depressed, chronically depressed, continually depressed, you're hoping they find something that really helps them.
Yeah.
And whether that's cognitive behavioral therapy, if it's prescription, if it's a change in lifestyle. Medications for acute psychotic episodes fail to improve quality of life and functional outcomes long term. There's a high relapse rate. patients discontinuing psychiatric medications frequently experience relapse, as these drugs may not address underlying issues effectively. So these are statements. We're going to give a little evidence as we go here to why this is believed, why these statements are believed to be true. Because someone can make that comment, they can make that claim, but what do they have backing it up? So let's continue on with the theories that we're going to be talking about today. Number two, adverse long-term effects of psychiatric drugs. That the long-term use of psychiatric medications can lead to significant adverse effects, sometimes exacerbating the conditions that they aim to treat. Cognitive decline can be one of the impacts. Certain antidepressants have been linked to accelerated cognitive decline in dementia patients. Sexual dysfunction. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the SSRIs that we all know about, have been associated with persistent sexual dysfunction in both men and women. We'll share with you some graphs and some information on that. Dependency and withdrawal. Long-term benzodiazepine, and I don't know how to say that so well. Let's try it again. Long-term benzodiazepine can lead to physical dependence. Withdrawal symptoms include anxiety and insomnia. Basically, you end up back with anxiety as you come off it. There's more to it too. There's much more. It's just not the psychological aspects, but there's actual physical changes that can go on.
In the brain. Yeah, and also the study mentioned the scanning the brain, some people, and see how the frontal cortex is.
It kills gray matter. Long-term use, and we'll get into some articles on that in a minute here. The influence of pharmaceutical industry and potential corruption. Do you think there's any reason the pharmaceutical industry wouldn't try to get drugs out there to sell to its market and try to get it out there as quickly as possible to as many people as possible with the most people being diagnosed for whatever that is as possible?
Yeah.
And in the book, he talks about DSM, what is it called? The Psychological Diagnoses Manual, the DSM-5. And it has more and more items being diagnosed. Now there's more things being defined as things that need treatment. That here are more things that are, what do they call it? You can get a clinical diagnosis for, and therefore you can get a prescription for.
And also the other point is that it has to be forever. It's not short term.
Some of these,
So it's long term. You never take out because it's dangerous. So it's keep going the buy and buy a prescription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I might have shared this before. I exhibit symptoms of ADHD. So I have symptoms of that, right? So I act in a way that I'm distractive. I don't sometimes listen to what Lizette says, and I'm already trying to answer. And that could just be obnoxious behavior syndrome, OBS. Because I always BS. No. But the point being is if you have ADHD and you take the prescription for it, and I did a while back, and it made me feel better, it made me feel good. It actually was I can share it was Vyvanse, why not? It was a slow release treatment for ADHD, which really kind of made you, it partly made my heart feel different. Like I felt like I loved everything. Everything was wonderful. But I had some physical symptoms that the doctor said, no, you shouldn't have those symptoms. And I did, and I stopped taking it. But the point is that while you're taking it, you feel physically different. And maybe they want you to feel good. Maybe the idea is not even to treat the ADHD, but to make you feel good. So you want to keep taking the pill.
Yeah.
Because it is, I believe it's like a slow release cocaine in a way, right? Yeah. So you have this feeling, this really good feeling, and maybe your symptoms are a little better, or at least maybe you say to the doctor, yeah, I feel great. Mm-hmm. But you're feeling great, I don't know if it's because those symptoms go away or the drug makes you feel good. And we've talked about this for other drugs or other things that people have prescribed. It may not treat the underlying condition. It may make your brain feel good, and therefore it wants to continue doing it. And because you feel good, you're telling your doctor, mm-hmm. oh, I feel much better.
More prescription.
Right. Here you go. But it doesn't cure the underlying issue.
Yeah.
Not like medicine. We've made, and part of the intro to this book and some stuff that we've read talks about all the progress that's been made in childhood disease, in the survival rates of humans when there are certain diseases, in medical responses to these great issues that in the past would be devastating, mm-hmm. that we do really well with, we do good with, we're mm-hmm. able to help. And while all those things are getting better, what they found is the opposite, and his point is that there are more people prescribed with antidepressants, anti-anxiety, ADHD, all these types of things that are now more highly prescribed. And we're going to get into the numbers in a minute, in a little bit, but it blows your mind. This is one area where there are more prescriptions, and there's very little indication that there's any long-term success from the medication. Mm-hmm. Stay on the medication. But even when you're on the medication, there are some studies that show you actually have worse long-term impact from being on the medication. Don't take our word for it. Read the studies yourself. Really talk to professionals. We're not doctors. We're not psychiatrists. We are engineers that want to share what we read very deeply, and we research very well, looking at research papers, not just somebody's comments on an article or what is that called, an opinion page, but we try to follow the documented published research by authors or psychologists on these subjects, and that's what we try to share with you.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. Welcome back to the psychology pharmacy. No, that's what it wasn't. What is it?
Sedates.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. Today, we're talking about how the pharmaceutical companies are plundering America and the world in the efforts to drive profit. Well, maybe.
Always. It's obvious.
Right, it's obvious. But here's some of the things that the pharmaceutical companies have done that lead other people to these conclusions. One, aggressive marketing. Pharmaceutical companies have been known to aggressively market psychiatric drugs, downplaying potential risks. Financial ties. There are financial relationships between drug manufacturers and healthcare providers, which can lead to biased prescribing practices. Research bias. Industry-funded studies may selectively report positive outcomes, skewing the perceived efficacy of psychiatric medications. For instance, this was one. They were talking about a psychiatric study where they had a certain number of people involved in it. And during the study, some people who didn't feel they were being helped dropped out. So what they were left with were a certain percentage of people who were helped. And it turned out to be like 16 people were helped. But when they started the study with 65, it would have been only 24%, whatever the number was. It would have been like 24% of the people were helped by this drug. But since all these people dropped out of the study, they were left with 16 people out of like 28 left in the study. So they said, oh, 58% were helped. Hmm. And that became their report in the study. But the people who dropped out of the study because they didn't feel they were benefiting, mm-hmm. they weren't included in the numbers. So that's brought up in this book about how numbers may not be exactly what is being presented. And yes, sometimes that is caught. Sometimes somebody looks at that and says, no, you can't use those numbers. But on the other hand, I think the pharmaceutical companies want to present numbers in their best way.
Yeah, of course.
And I would like to say that probably most pharmaceutical studies are on the up and up, but they're not always, not 100% of the time. And we all know that. Sometimes things are rushed to market. Sometimes we need to get this out there and replace another drug we have before the patent goes away. Because once we lose that patent, anyone can make it and make it cheaper. So mm-hmm. we need to have a new one that treats things just a little better, which then becomes the one that is prescribed. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. What else do we have going on here? Overprescription. Overprescription and medicalization of normal emotions. And what do we mean by that? Is that by expanding definitions of what is abnormal behavior, mm-hmm. right? So now we have new social norms where this behavior is, you're acting too much like a boy, you have ADHD. So now you need to be treated for it. Right, so we've changed society and how people, or we change how we're allowed to discipline, and now we don't discipline a certain way, so now that behavior is disciplined not by a human interaction, but by here's a drug the person needs to take so they calm down.
Yeah.
So they focus on their schoolwork, right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. So let's see what else we have here for overprescription. Antidepressant overuse. High rates of antidepressant prescription suggest that medications are used to address social issues rather than medical conditions. Diagnostic expansion. Broadening diagnostic criteria, as we talked about, DSM, for mental health disorders results in labeling normal emotional variations as pathological. And that's the word I was looking for before, pathological. That people are diagnosed with a pathological problem that they then need to have a prescription for. Children and adolescents, increasing prescription rates amongst these children and adolescents raise concerns about pathologicalizing typical developmental behaviors. So making typical developmental behaviors, which may be extreme one way or the other because that's what kids do, as being unacceptable behaviors, that's a pathology that we need to write a prescription for. Wow, I wonder how many prescriptions I would have if I was a child today.
I can make a more right now, by the way.
So there need to be alternative approaches, right, to healthcare. And this is the statement that is made by, I'll say, James Davies reiterating Bob Whitaker. And this is most likely the Bob Whitaker side of things. The limitations of drug-based approach highlight the necessity for alternative and integrative mental health treatments. Therapeutic interventions, psychotherapies such as cognitive behavioral therapy, have been shown effectiveness in treating various mental health conditions without the adverse effects associated with medications. Lifestyle modifications, exercise, nutrition, mindfulness practices. We always come up to mindfulness.
Yeah,
mindfulness is big.
I promote we have to do mindfulness.
Mindfulness. Yeah. Can serve as adjuncts or alternatives to medication. And then social support systems, community-based programs and support networks play a crucial role in mental health recovery and maintenance. I know a lot of people who claim that they are depressed or sad or lonely, and part of it is there's less of a social connection than there used to be. Mm-hmm. I don't think we talk about it in our presentation, but they talk about computers and phones and how there's a lot of connection through your computer and phone, but it's isolation.
Yeah.
It's connected isolation. It's group isolation.
Mm-hmm. Use the touching, the see, the smell,
mm-hmm.
the old sense.
Yeah. And that's what they're saying, is that one of the things that's leading potentially to more depression and anxiety is computers, online, social media.
Mm-hmm.
We did a story before, or a study, we repeated studies before that said 68% of those kids who spend 2 hours or more online are claiming to be depressed or anxious. And that it was something like 40% of all children or 50% of all children spend 2 hours or more online every day. And it turned out that something like 40%, 35 to 40% of kids today, because of social media, because of online computer and phones, are depressed or anxious.
Mm-hmm.
So are we creating this? It's not a mental thing that someone's born with. It's a trained
it's environment.
Thing.
Yes, it's environment.
And the other is, are people getting older and becoming anxious because when they were younger, they didn't experience the training of how to handle being anxious?
Yeah.
You know, so everyone gets an award, right? So you get the... So I know that a lot of times us older folk talk about the bad things that we did to our kids, but some of the things that we did to what we thought make them happy, right? That everybody gets a candy bar at the end of the game, even if you lost. Everybody mm-hmm. gets a trophy at the end of the season. That those things that we did because we thought they would be happy, that it also, in some of the studies, show that when somebody receives something not for doing the work, it loses the incentive. It's in instead of an intrinsic reward, which is internal guided, it's an extrinsic reward, which breaks down the intrinsic piece of it. And now I'm only going to do stuff if there's an extrinsic reward. I have no internal motivation.
Mm-hmm. And this is also the story talking about how many people don't like the word they have. So
yeah.
It's a high and is it something like the interesting, you know? Maybe it's part of this consequence.
Well, I think part of the consequence is
yeah.
telling children, you can be anything you want to be. And then when they grow up and they can't be, and they're stuck in a job, and we're all stuck in certain jobs, maybe we like some of our jobs better than others, but we're mm-hmm. in a job. And when you first hit that wall and go, but I don't like this, and now I expected that I could be anything that I wanted to be, and I can't. Now I'm more depressed.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it's a negative thing to let somebody know you have many options, but mm-hmm. I think the reality needs to be there too, right?
Yeah, the effort, the discipline, the hard work.
Yeah.
Because it's not like you want to do what you want versus that you need to work in hard what you want to have.
So all kids need to take a martial art where getting a black belt takes like 12 years. And they have to learn all these katas and exercises and discipline, learn how to be proper, learn how to be
yeah.
respectful. They do. I'm generalizing now. I think it's a very big benefit to have long-term, slowly reached goals where you have a little bit of a reward. I have my yellow belt now, and I have my yellow belt with the one stripe on it now, that you slowly are making progress, which tells you that work, I get rewarded for. I get rewarded for work. I don't just get a black belt. I've seen children at the age of 8 with a black belt, and I'm like, what?
It's difficult, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I take my white belt and I just dip it in black ink, and I have a black belt. Yeah. So what else we have? So we talked about social support systems. There's so much here. Psychiatric drugs, antidepressants. This is the big thing because most of the United States, most of the world, and we're going to talk numbers in a minute. When I say most, there is a high number of people who are on SSRIs, antidepressants, for depression and anxiety. And it's higher than ever before. And the numbers have skyrocketed over the last 20 years. And we'll talk about percentages in a minute. So when you are on these SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, it can cause sexual dysfunction, emotional blunting, and in some cases, increased suicidal thoughts, particularly in younger populations. Withdrawal challenges of these drugs, when you discontinue the SSRI, it can lead to withdrawal symptoms, including dizziness, insomnia, and flu-like symptoms, complicating the cessation process when you give it up and no longer do it anymore. Finally, the psychiatric drug that is used a lot of times for schizophrenia and anxiety, it's the benzodiazepines, which are prescribed for anxiety, insomnia, and other conditions requiring sedation, that there's dependency risks. Long-term use can lead to physical dependency with withdrawal symptoms that may be severe and protracted. They also can end up and wind up giving cognitive impairment. Chronic use has been linked to memory problems and an increased risk of dementia. So heavy anxiety, insomnia, and other conditions that require sedation, that long-term use, you can end up actually with losing brain function.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty difficult, pretty bad, pretty awful. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the awful things that we are now prescribing normally and how these drugs interact with kids and adults and really should be an indication of something we should be concerned about. Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. In moments of gratitude, we notice the beauty in every detail, the smiles, the shining eyes, the teamwork, perseverance, and effort. These are the building blocks of the incredible mission Ayudaven supports. We've witnessed girls who joined the home as babies grow into confident professionals, certified in their passions and contributing to society in meaningful ways. Three inspiring stories from Ayudaven. Angela, who came to Muchos Manos at 3 months of age. She will graduate as a food and beverage manager with plans to open her own bakery. Maria, who joined Muchos Manos at the age of 9. Today she's in her second year of dentistry. And Mercedes, who came to the home at the age of 12. Now a dentist graduate, she works at one of Valencia, Venezuela's top dental centers. Make a donation today via Zelle at gym@ayudaven.org and celebrate the rhythm of hope, purpose, and unity that connects us all together. Welcome back to tonight's show. One of the things we're going to go right into is that antidepressant prescribing increases by 35% in just 6 years. Every year, the amount of antidepressants has been going up 6 years in a row.
Wow.
So does that mean we're just finding out more people are depressed, or we're just filling out more prescriptions?
And the rate of people's better health is go down.
Yeah. So, and by the way, this isn't just the number of people, like, oh, the population's growing, that's why. It's the percentage of people, the number per thousand, that the number is going up. It's a greater and greater and greater percentage of the population who are getting these prescriptions, claiming to have depression and anxiety, actually having depression and anxiety, and getting prescriptions
forever
for it. Right. And you once on and must stay on. So how about amongst youth? Here's some numbers. Between 2016 and 2022, antidepressant prescriptions for U.S. individuals age 12 to 25 rose by 66%.
You can cheer.
I'll share. Yeah. I wasn't going to share because it's so much information. It went from the 2,575 to 4,284 per 100,000 people for those young people. Gender disparities. Post March of 2020, prescription rates increased 129.6% faster among females ages 12 to 17 and 56.5% faster among females age 18 to 25, peaking during the first COVID-19 lockdown in March of 2020. So the peak increase happened in the beginning of COVID. Rising rates of depression and anxiety among youth, exacerbated by COVID-19 pandemic, have led to increased antidepressant use. It's basically what we just said. Healthcare access. Limited availability of mental health professionals in person has resulted in primary care physicians prescribing antidepressants, sometimes without specialist consultation. Social determinants. Issues like financial stress, social isolation, and chronic stressors are significant contributors to deteriorating mental health, leading to higher medication rates. And that was from theguardian.com. Healthcare access was one interesting thing. They said, so there is less, not a great ability to see a specialist, and then the normal physicians and the normal doctors were able to prescribe medication for psychological issues. Yeah. Which was kind of interesting. So if that was a special that was done in COVID, or if that's always been the case, or it was, well, people who need to be treated for depression, and somehow the pharmaceutical companies opened up the regular doctor to being able to prescribe these things.
Yeah.
Got it approved? Could be. Antidepressants, especially the SSRIs that we spoke about, have been linked to sexual dysfunction, emotional numbness, and increased suicide risk in young populations. Withdrawal challenges. Patients face difficulties in discontinuing antidepressants, experiencing withdrawal symptoms that necessitate gradual tapering under medical supervision. And then societal concerns. Overprescription may overshadow addressing underlying social issues, leading to a reliance on medication rather than holistic solutions. So we're not going to figure out what's causing the depression in your life or in society, but we'll just give you, here's your prescription.
Yeah.
So don't fix the situation. Don't fix yourself. Maybe it's health related. Maybe it's where you're working. Maybe it's your family. Maybe there are these things that need to be addressed. But if I can just medicate, I don't need to address them.
And then never go to the root cause of the problem. Because you're not born like that. So you have diseases like I mentioned the fever. So you have a fever.
Yeah.
It's a symptom that something happened. So you need to figure out what is the original problem.
Don't look for the virus. Just take something that stops the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So here, this is the antidepressant drug consumption per 1,000 people in 2021. This study was done across Europe and some other areas, leaving out the United States for whatever reason. But Iceland had the world highest antidepressant drug consumption. We visited Iceland, and I guess some of the areas are a little depressing, especially during the winter. Now, Portugal... is pretty high too, 139 per 1,000 people. So that's 13% of the population were prescribed and consuming antidepressants. Canada, 130. What was it? Australia, 12.2, which is 12%. Where did the U.S. fall in here? I believe I have it. I had to insert it though. The U.S. was here. It was fifth. It would have been 110. Or 11% of the population were consuming antidepressants. 11%. One last little statistic here. This graph. Rising trends, lifetime and current depression rates. Lifetime depression, 29%. That in a person's lifetime, 29% will claim or be diagnosed with having depression. So it's like one third of the population, one out of every three people.
Wow.
Three out of ten, one out of three. I'm trying to make it simple numbers here, but that's a huge amount.
Number, yeah.
Now, I know I've been sad a few days, for 2 weeks maybe, but to be, quote, clinically depressed, where you could be diagnosed with depression, that's a huge amount. So, one, is it true? Have we expanded what we call depression now to include more people? Is it being overdiagnosed for a reason? Because I can write a prescription, I get a little money for writing the prescription, or it's just incentive, you know, incentivizing. If you are taking an antidepressant, now as your doctor, I see you every 3 months.
Yeah.
And with healthcare being as it is, we need repeat business because we get such a little bit each time. We got to drum up that business.
Yeah.
I also talked about this to you before, which is with the reduction in manufacturing in the United States, less people producing things, mm-hmm. we need other people doing other things that move money through the economy. And by having now drugs as a parasite on the worker, they are prescribed to something where some of their patients, it's like a tax. It's the drug tax, mm-hmm. the medical treatment tax. They have been trained through society, the media, and the pharmaceutical companies, and their doctor that, oh, you need this. You're now diagnosed with that. And now a certain percent of your pay is going to be going to the pharmaceutical company and the doctor. And this is how the world goes round.
Yeah.
So take those antidepressant pills and be happy about it because you're supporting somebody else who is not being productive.
Yeah.
All right. I know I've gone over my limit of being
your
crazy
comment,
for the moment.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
right. So here to
be focused.
So there is SSRI impact on fertility. So going back to antidepressants, associated with reduced sperm count in male, motility, movement, and morphology of sperm. Effect may result from alterations in serotonin levels affecting sperm production. Impact on female fertility. Some studies report no significant impact on ovulation or pregnancy rates. Other studies suggest an increased risk of miscarriage or preterm birth. Finally, overall, when you're considering taking SSRIs, you should balance the benefits of treating mental health condition against potential fertility impacts by talking with your doctor.
Wow.
Now, there's another chart from another place I looked, which looked at the increase of antidepressant prescriptions and the decrease in the number of fertility rate. So here is fertility rate versus antidepressant being taken by the population. So the one line that's going up, which is kind of gray, is the percent of population taking antidepressants or the SSRIs. And then the fertility rate is the pink line that's dropping across the graph and coming down. So as one goes up, the other goes down. Remember, correlation mm-hmm. does not mean causation. But when you're dealing with long-term effects of a drug you're putting into your body where yeah. we don't have enough information.
Mm-hmm.
And by all means, if you go back in time, you're always going to find drugs that were put out there, medications that were put out there that we thought were safe and effective that turned out to be not safe and not effective or not safe.
We saw many effective.
It could be more effective than you even knew, right?
Yeah.
So, and there are many that are safe and effective, but there are some that we learn over time was not what we thought it was, right? And let's go back into here. Oh, here we go. More headlines. Surge in autism diagnosis raises concerns about overdiagnosis. Now, I heard this the other day, right? Oh, there's more autism now than ever before. Mm-hmm. What's going on with our food supply? Oh, it's our vaccines. Oh, it's this, it's that. Well, if you didn't know autism was something that was diagnosable, like 30, 40 years ago, if people really didn't see it as something, they didn't understand it. They didn't talk about it. Compared to today, where it is much more well known, understood, and more, I don't want to say easy to diagnose, but there's more of a, even looking for it. Of course, something that you now recognize, you're going to see more than we didn't recognize and didn't know about it. So that's one. But let's go into the diagnoses of autism. Is maybe somebody is borderline, and in the past they would be, oh, now, you know, you're close enough to the normal range of spectrum, and we're going to do nothing. Or now it may be, well, you know, that's a treatable thing now, because we've expanded the definition of what behaviors fall in.
In the classification, how you want to see.
So what do we have here? ADHD, autism, cancer. The doctor says overdiagnosis is the issue. Now, we're not going into the articles, but these are headlines. An overdiagnosis epidemic is harming patients' mental health. And then lastly, the number of people with chronic conditions is soaring. Are we less healthy than we used to be? Or over-diagnosing illnesses? We know the right questions to ask. We know we're looking at these things. But we're all so busy. How do you know? How do you know what to do? So we have the rise in diagnosis of psychological disorders, such as ADHD, autism, and depression. So we can fly through this here. So we just talked about it. ADHD in Virginia, up to 33% of boys are diagnosed with ADHD, one study found, and up to 15% of all boys by the time they reach 18 nationwide are diagnosed with ADHD. Right? 15% of boys. So boys basically are ADHD.
Exactly.
A little boy growing up is basically like ADHD in a body. You know?
Yeah.
And many of them are able to handle the society and what you're supposed to do, and what, and some are a little bit off the board, too hyperactive.
So they mean the woman is no ADHD.
That very, very, very little women are ADHD. There are women with ADHD, but not all of them can be like me. Yeah. So what else do we have? Autism has seen a significant rise in diagnoses among children age 5 to 8 between 2011 and 2022. It tripled. So there's been a tripling of diagnoses of autism. And then finally, depression and anxiety. The number of individuals diagnosed with depression and anxiety has also escalated, reflecting a broader recognition of mental health issues. What do you think some of the reasons are for this? I'm just going to leave this alone. Greater awareness, as we said, we're more aware of what to look for. Diagnostic criteria evolution, the DSM, the Manual for Diagnosing Psychological Disorders, has grown in the definitions and the information to make it more easily understood. Improved access to healthcare, more people in more areas of a more diverse geographic locations have access now to healthcare. So now there's more ability to diagnose these things. And social factors, changing societal expectations, and a greater focus on mental health have led more people to seek diagnoses and treatments. For instance, and I'm going to say this, this is probably completely wrong, but I'll do it anyway, is that young boys with rambunctious behavior, running around, doing things, jumping, pushing each other, that in the past, oh, the boys will be boys. Well, society has changed, and maybe they don't want to let the kids do this anymore. Maybe this is disruptive. Maybe this isn't acceptable behavior because we were defining it as a difference. And now it's like, no, we all have to act the same and we have to act civil. And so when a boy is acting this way, and in the past maybe it would have been handled a little differently, now it is, there's definitely ADHD.
Wow.
Wow?
Yeah.
You think?
Yes, it's wow okay. for me.
Wow. So those were the societal factors. What else do we have here? Potential for overdiagnoses. Here, what else do we have here? The medicalization of normal behavior. So some of these normal behaviors which were previously considered within the spectrum of normal human experience are now sometimes labeled as pathological. A significant rise in autism diagnoses have been partly attributed to the medicalization of behaviors that we thought were deemed typical in the past. Diagnostic ambiguity, the subjective nature, oh, this is one, the subjective nature of psychiatric diagnoses can lead to inconsistencies. Also, when you are getting public assistance for having a child that is labeled with a psychiatric disorder, you may be bringing the child to more than one doctor to try to get the diagnoses. Now, part of it may be is you need the help because you need to help take care of the child. But when there is more help available, it will also lead to more people trying to get the diagnoses when maybe it's borderline.
Yeah.
And then lastly, societal and economic incentives. And that's what I guess what I was just saying is that there is financial incentives for schools and healthcare providers, as well as societal trends towards labeling behaviors, which may contribute to higher diagnoses or diagnosis rates. And then finally, we were talking about how all countries have been increasing. Mm-hmm. Here is a chart that shows how the numbers across the board in countries of daily dosages have gone up. Iceland, if you see, it was 70 back in the year 2000. Now it's that 100 and, well, this is a little bit older chart, but it was up to 160 doses per 1,000 inhabitants in 2022. So these numbers have almost doubled in 20 years. They've all gone up greatly. And again, if you remember, the United States is about 110, and today is in fifth place. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but oh, we're fifth place, yay.
We grew up.
We want to be number one. It's depressing that we're not number one. Oh, wait, now you are.
I cannot laugh because I am depressed.
Okay. We don't want to make a joke out of this, but it's a really difficult subject, and it's tough. There is so much more to talk about. I think we were kind of silly to think that we would be getting the show done in one sitting. But I wanted to see if we could tie it up. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the most important. If you've missed everything in the show until this point, thank you for staying to this point. This is the most important point of all. There's an association between long-term antipsychotic use and prefrontal cortex atrophy. Research indicates that prolonged use of certain psychiatric medications, especially antipsychotics, is linked to a reduction in the volume of gray matter in the prefrontal cortex, a brain region essential for making higher cognitive functions such as decision-making and planning. And I know there's something that we don't want to talk about, we never want to talk about, but I'm going to share headlines because we sometimes don't know what we're doing. I know Lizette doesn't know what I'm about to do, but I'm going to talk about marijuana usage. Heavy use of marijuana could threaten the brain in the same way where it can kill the gray area of the prefrontal cortex. Heavy cannabis use may impair brain's working memory, study suggests. It's just not one or two studies. There is a wide range of studies. Right now, it's heavy marijuana use, but it's affecting the brain, and we've legalized it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's also studies on alcohol and other things that are bad, but I think we should share that. And maybe we'll go back and share one on alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we wanted to start off with the antidepressants. We wanted to talk about anxiety and depression and that it's now a higher prevalence than ever before. People are being diagnosed at higher rates than ever before. There are more people on antidepressants than ever before. And I think we do not know well enough the long-term benefits or dangers of these medications. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate. Have a great week.
Bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.